And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
We're in Gravelburg, Saskatchewan today, and super excited we finally found it. The largest selection greeting cards. Good job, Gravelburg.
Good morning, Sweet World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Wednesday, June 16th. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling with the homie, Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, Tass? Got my Top Shot Hot Boy, our deadhead, Trey Kirby.
Heyo!
Heyo! International man of mystery, taking it to the Max Lee Ellis.
Friends.
And finally, making the magic happen here on a Wednesday, it's JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team for joining us live right now on YouTube. Smash that like button. Leave your comments. And if you haven't already, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. Keep sending in your questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. You can send them in all week long. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. Tweet them in if you want, at nodunksinc. We'll be hitting the beach later today. 3 p.m. Eastern, live on YouTube, if you want to come around and kick some sand while we answer some of your NBA and non-NBA questions. And finally, go grab your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com. Okay, lots to get to here today. We had the All-NBA teams announced last night. We'll dissect those, talk snubs, all that good stuff. Lee, you got tweet of the night, so I'm very excited, and I'm going to predict that we're either hearing from Magic Johnson or wildcard Reggie Miller.
I'm very excited
for one of these.
It's someone you know, actually. It is someone you know, and I think you've even played basketball with this person as well.
Wow, so it's not one of those two. Interesting. We'll also look ahead to tonight's pivotal Game 5's huge late-breaking news regarding Kawhi Leonard not playing in Game 5 tonight. Maybe not the rest of the series, for all we know. And then we also have Chris Paul news that he is in safety and health protocols. So who knows what's going on with him. But we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. Because we are starting, Tass, with Kevin Durant's historic performance, lifting the Nets over the Bucks in Game 5. One of the greatest playoff game performances I think we've ever seen. I don't think I'm going too far there with the 49-17-10. Man, what a game.
Now, what a joy to watch this man play basketball. You know, there's those fans that just watch NBA games and say, come on, man, drive, score, do it every possession. They just want the best players to do it on every possession, and it's impossible, right? It's impossible for those players to do it. But Kevin Durant did it for once. Kevin Durant literally was the entire Brooklyn Nets team yesterday. He was taking it upon himself, and they desperately needed his special play, his all-world play, because he was playing with James Harden, who was playing on one leg. He did not want to go in the lane. I think you could count it on one hand how many times he went into the lane despite playing 46 minutes. I think he touched paint twice. He hit one shot in this game. Joe Harris, one of the best shooters in the world, his third straight bad game. So they desperately needed Kevin Durant to come up and fire every single time, and he couldn't be stopped by the Milwaukee Bucks. They did everything that they could. They threw two guys at him as soon as he stepped over half court, and he was finding guys perfectly. So he got 10 assists, but then he would go back and get the ball when he wasn't firing away, and he'd hit shot after shot after shot after shot. He basically shot 70% from the floor for his 49 points. You know, one of my best experiences enjoying the game, I never got to play with Magic Johnson or Reggie Miller, but one thing I did get to do was see Kevin Durant up close 2011 during the lockout. There was a charity game, and Kevin Durant was on the floor, came up for LaMarcus Aldridge's charity game. Media wanted to talk to him. He said, can I just get some shots up first, media? He still didn't like the media back then, although he was very nice to Jared Greenberg after the game yesterday. But anyway, because it was a charity game, we got to be really up close and personal. And just to see the fluidity, the smoothness that Kevin Durant shoots the ball, there is nobody like him. There isn't. He would be the prototype, I think, if you drew up a basketball player. He would be it, and he was showing it on the floor yesterday, how smooth he was from 7 feet, how able he is to pass at 7 feet tall. And he was the whole team. He was that performance where you just ask a guy to do everything. And he did it. I guess the most surprising thing was he missed free throws, which wasn't very Kevin Durant.
Chance for 50 there at the end.
That's right.
I mean, but 49, 17, 10, three steals, two blocks. First player in history to have a 45, 15, 10 playoff game. And they were down big, too. That's right. TK with Brooklyn outscoring the Bucks 71 to 49 in the second half after being down 17. It was looking like it might be over. It looked like it didn't matter what type of KD game you were going to have, that the Bucks were still going to have enough. And we can get into the final possessions and plays and minutes and all that. It was there still for Milwaukee to win this game with an incredible KD line. But that big three where Harden did nothing because he really couldn't. I mean, it's amazing this guy played 40 plus minutes in this game. And he just gives it to KD. He's like, please save us. Just save us. And he hit that three over Middleton there and then gave like the crazy sort of like, you know, showing emotion for KD. He's pretty stone cold assassin used most of the time, but he showed some emotion there. And yeah, that sort of like sealed the deal. But yeah, what'd you think of this one? Him, you know, he got some help and we'll get to Uncle Jeff and Blake Griffin, but it was, Tess ain't wrong. This was a one man show. He did everything.
48 minutes as well. Just incredible stuff. If you read that New York Times profile by Sam Anderson, maybe a week back, he was just on Zach Lowe's podcast. I got stuck waiting at a Culver's recently for just about 45 minutes. I listened to that whole podcast and had read the article. And it basically comes down to Kevin Durant just wants to play perfect basketball. And we pretty much saw that last night because it seemed a little bit ridiculous yesterday when the Stream Team is like, over under 45 and a half points. I said, no way, man. No way. Under, but he's going to go over on assist. I'm thinking 40 and 10. That's a nice game, and it would have been. But 49 and 10 plus 17 rebounds. Incredible stuff. And unlike in game three where KD had scored 9 straight points, but then Bruce Brown took the last 2 shots for the Nets, KD was not letting anybody else get the ball. He hit that three, like you're saying. He reacted like Antonio Banderas seeing a great tweet on the internet. And that was very Klay Thompson-y, the way he had his feet not set at the rim, kind of pointing over to the sideline. And when KD reacted like that, when he did the pursing of the lips, it was just like, this is special stuff, man. This is like, you could tell he knew that it was special as well. I thought it's also a fun twist that the Nets were wearing their Basquiat jerseys last night. I love when there's a classic performance in like a random jersey, like LeBron's 2016 title, Game 7, in the sleeved black jerseys. Now we got this, KD, an all-time great game in the Basquiat jerseys. They're going to live forever, even if they only are around for 1 year. That was just awesome to watch. I mean, how could you not be going crazy in group chats and on Twitter and getting in touch with anybody you know who's a basketball fan, hoping they're watching the same thing you are?
Yeah, I mean, I struggle to go to sleep after like big playoff games or big performances like that. You're like just legit hyped because you're like, what did I just see? You know, we watch, at this point, thousands of basketball games, and there's these special ones, Lele, that just stick out and you'll probably remember forever. And I think that is one of them, especially if the Nets go on to beat the Bucks here. And again, we'll get to what Milwaukee did wrong in this. Can they recover? You know, can they get this back to 7 in Brooklyn to even give themselves a chance? And geez, is Bud already fired? All that. But I just keep going, man, this guy also had a torn Achilles tendon that we saw live. We were in the building for when that goes down up in Toronto. And that's 2 years ago. That's it. I mean, some people are like, oh, 2 years is a lifetime. Well, I don't know. I don't think, you know, it was rare for anyone to have that injury to get back to just all world, as Tass said, level. That's another part of this whole thing that is almost forgotten at this point. This guy would had like the most devastating injury you can really have in as an NBA basketball player. And here he is doing this. It's insane stuff.
Yeah, well, one of my favorite players of all time, Isaiah Thomas, he tore his Achilles tendon and it basically ruined his career. And he's only a 6'1" guy. If you look at Kevin Durant, how he goes out and plays, he's jumping, he's running, he's moving. You would not look at this guy and automatically say, oh, yeah, he's easily coming off an Achilles tendon like it was a hamstring injury. I mean, he was just, you know, he's got the Chris Paul sort of zigzag move across the paint to get those couple of early ones to start the fourth quarter. Then he hit the three as well after Chris Middleton hit a three. And every single time down, it was just kind of like, Steve Nash was smart, great coaching. Don't think overthink this at all. Just say, Kevin Durant, your point, whatever, forward, center, anything you are tonight, you can do it. And I thought, you know, Landry Shamet in that fourth quarter, he had a couple of laps. It was just like the other guy's like, just move around. He might pass it to you. If you get it, don't mess it up. Just go in and score that ball. And Durant was kind of like, you know, you guys, I might need you. Just be ready. But otherwise, I've got this. And I just thought it was incredible. I mean, I thought... we didn't see Giannis, I don't think, on any possessions, which I think was a mistake, one of the many mistakes I think Budenholzer made in this game. And again, look, it's not to say that Giannis goes out there and shuts him down and Durant doesn't go off, because Durant scores against anybody. We know that. He's so incredibly gifted. But you at least want to see Giannis for a possession or two, a couple of possessions, something, try something different there. So I think Budenholzer made a mistake there. But that sort of takes away still from just when we do see a performance like this, because it was 20 points in that fourth quarter. You know, this is one of those ones we'll remember forever, because it's the game five. It's the series on the line. The Nets were down big. They needed some inspiration. James Harden would not have been playing if this wasn't a, you know, potential pivotal playoff series game, because he clearly wasn't 100% out there. Kevin Durant was trying to find other guys. He got a little bit from Blake Griffin. He got it incredibly from Jeff Green out there as well, who, you know, Jeff Green... we know he's got the highlight reel dunks, like a highlight reel collection as good as anyone. Now he's got a Klay Thompson game to add to his collection as well.
Seven threes. I mean, KD gets all the headlines, but that's wild.
After the game, you would think Jeff Green cost his team the game. I don't know if you guys saw it on TNT.
Totally.
Loki.
Yeah.
It was like, Jeffy, man, that's one of the greatest performances I've ever seen from you. But again, Kevin Durant, you know, as great as he was, he just needed a couple of little contributions from guys there, and he got it. But just an incredibly masterful performance in his bag, had all the shots. But then that free throw at the end, man, imagine if he'd fallen over the line there and not hit that second free throw. But he did. They win the game, and this goes down as one of KD's most incredible performances.
Yeah. Is it his best game ever? I mean, what comes to mind? Is it game three of the 18 finals is amazing. He has incredible stat line, hits that huge three. It basically ends the series. You know, he's on the Super Warriors. I don't know. I think it might be. I know he has other ones too, of course, back even to his Thunder days. Is there another one, Tass, that comes to mind? Or is this the one? I mean, with the situation with the no Kyrie, and then Harden's playing, but not really. He's almost hurting them at that times out there. I know he's playing decoy and all that, and he gave it his all. I'm the 1-for-10 socks, so he couldn't hit a three, all that. But I think it might be. I think this is KD's greatest playoff performance, at least.
Yeah, I think this one differs than the one in the finals with the Warriors, because this was Kevin Durant by himself. You know, he didn't have anybody playing with him. I think that was the difference. I think what Zach Lowe was talking about last week on that podcast that Trey mentioned was Kevin Durant has never really had to be that, you know, that solo guy where he's just got to go do it himself. You know, like LeBron, you know, against the Pistons when they made the finals in 2007, like really not had anybody with him. Or Russell Westbrook when he went and got the MVP. You know, those types of scenarios, or James Harden or anything like that. So I think this one might stand out a bit more, even though that one was in the finals and it was against LeBron, obviously, and it was a big shot at the end to seal it. But this one has that big shot to seal it. Where he got the ball with, you know, 3.5 seconds left on the shot clock, and he banged it home, and he has the reaction, and he played 48 minutes. It is the second round, so there is a difference.
But it just needs a name.
The stat line is there.
Yeah. Honestly, this game just needs a name, and this will be the game that people keep referring to the way that everybody keeps referring to Stoneface LeBron against the Celtics. Mm-hmm. This is what that game is going to be for Kevin Durant. Maybe we call it the kiss face game. I don't know what you want to call it, because the man was in his bag. Like, yeah, it would have been nice for Giannis to take a turn, but that would have just been Giannis getting scored on in this
game. I think that's
100%
right. It really
do not matter who was guarding him. Put Butt out there, see if he can guard him. Or maybe try a double team. I don't know. You know, when he's cooking there in the third quarter, maybe don't wait until he's made 1,000 straight shots in a row before you finally send Pat Connaughton over there to try and do something.
Oh, my God, I know. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Or make him work in the post. I mean, there's options. Kevin Durant played 48 minutes, and he had to, you know, help out guarding a lot in the paint. But there was lots of options on the offensive end for Bud to make things a lot different for Kevin Durant and his Bucks. You know, James Harden was playing on half a freaking leg.
Oh, Jesus.
Maybe go at him. I know that they just kept to the same plan.
This is Coach Bud in a nutshell. This is all I kept thinking about in this game, and really every time with him. This. That meme. This is fine. That Bud is the dog sitting in the room where it's burning down, having a cup of coffee. And I don't know why. It's got to be infuriating, especially if you're a Bucks fan to see it. The decisions and the just like, yep, we'll just ride it out. It's okay. This is fine. No, your house is burning down. He's torching you.
Yeah, but sometimes that works. You know, when you have the players to make it work, you have the players to take over.
Well,
but they didn't. Like Drew Holiday,
but Giannis is not a takeover guy. This is not breaking news by any means. Yeah, he's just not that guy. He's not.
Yeah.
He's
and Chris Middleton didn't do it. And Drew Holiday was signed to do it. He still hasn't had a 20-point game in this series. They got three, you know, virtual max guys. And somebody's got to take over. Somebody's got to call somebody. And yeah, you got to blame Coach Bud. Of course. You know, Drew Holiday could pick James Harden to defend him on every possession. Drew Holiday can beat James Harden, who doesn't want... He was running three-point line to three-point line. He was playing old man YMCA game. He wasn't driving at all. He wasn't touching the lane. Drew Holiday could have picked him. Even if he wasn't guarding him, he could have easily called for a screen to get James Harden's guy. I think, you know, Drew Holiday has to get some of the blame here. He's the point guard. He's got to run the ship.
There's a lot of blame to go around for a lot of these guys. Absolutely. Yeah. I've been so disappointed in Drew Holiday in this series. I mean... he's had fine lines, fine moments. He does play hard on defense, but Eric Bledsoe is a decent defender. And, that's the truth.
Major
he's playing
Bledsoe
a lot.
Vibes.
He's exactly. He's he took some boneheaded shots. He had an air ball that was bad. And yeah, just that control, I think, Tass, is sort of what you're getting out of. Like, well, if Bud's not going to take control of this team, Jesus, man. Like, it'd be nice to have Chris Paul, I guess, running the show right now and at least figuring out where are our best chances. Let's get Harden in space. Instead, Giannis is on the block, and Harden, the one thing he can probably do with, like, one bum leg is like, yeah, I can probably defend him in the post here. Don't bring the double. Don't bring it.
Literally, don't help me.
Yeah.
That was pretty crazy. I don't know. I was of two minds with James Harden. On one hand, I'm like, is this going to be his Willis Reed game? You know, he came out there. He didn't really do much, but he gave them the Nets an emotional boost. He allowed KD to play off the ball a little bit, be a threat there, and save him... just the ball handling duties and just a little bit more variety. I thought that was huge, just Harden being out there. But on the other hand, I'm Lee Ellis. How the f*** did the Milwaukee Bucks allow James Harden to play 45 minutes in this game? The guy was memed off of an all-NBA team because he couldn't play defense, and he played 45 minutes on one leg. How do you not go at him
Every single time. That's it.
I mean, part of it is like what you're saying, Skeets. There was the time when Drew Holiday did pick James Harden. At one point, he had a nice post-up finish. That was great. Let's see that the entire game. But that air ball, he was like a foot left and a foot short.
Yeah.
Completely shook. Embarrassing stuff for the Bucks that they allowed Harden to be able to play in that game. You should be able to get him off the court if he can't run the entire court. Come on. Ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, Leo, go on.
Bud Ball at its best, and we saw it up close here in Atlanta, was ball movement, players just getting to their spots, especially in the fourth quarter. But in the second half, there was just none of that. It seemed to be just kind of like they came down on offense and was like, who wants to do something? Yeah. You know, and Giannis, when he goes into the paint there and he rises up, whether it's over Jeff Green or Blake Griffin, he either got fouled or he scored a lot of the time, just higher percentage possessions. But then late in the fourth, he had a fadeaway. He stepped into a three that clanked. That just seems to me either, again, the message is not coming through from Coach Bud, or he's not saying to the guys, get that ball moving, guys. Get that ball. Open the floor up. Get James Harden moving. You know, they don't have the interior presence. And Giannis, when he's going downhill into the paint, that's our best chance. But that just did not happen at all. So, you know, they allowed the Bucks allowed the Nets to get back into this. When it was a 17-point game, it was like things are going along pretty nicely here. And even in that second quarter, I thought another mistake Bud made. Giannis scored 7 points in a row. He actually hit a three, and he had two sort of high percentage drives into the lane for a dunk and a layup, and he pulled him out straight away. And I thought, now look, he's not Klay Thompson, where it's like this guy can just maybe catch fire, but he was in a flow, he was in a groove. Like, that's when you got to squeeze the throat, as Kevin Harlan said about Chris Paul against the Nuggets. It's like, it was almost like Bud said, 17 points, sweet, I'll sneak him here a couple of minutes rest. And now what happened was Drew Holiday came in, picked up a third foul. So Giannis only sat for less than a minute anyway. But it was more just sort of like you disrupted that little flow that you had there. Like you had to kill the Nets last night, because when you've got a Kevin Durant against you, he can come up and bite you. And that's exactly what happened. So Budenholzer, I just think, continues to make these silly mistakes. You know, and Steve Nash is a great example here. It's like, you know what, game five, at the start of the third quarter, Jared Greenberg said, is he going to go 48 minutes? He's like, oh, that's not a great question, or I wish you didn't ask me that.
Right.
Because he sort of didn't want to have to answer it. And Grant Hill was alluding to it on the broadcast as well. We're going to see 48 minutes from this guy because it's not ideal. But in a game win, a game situation like that, a series on the line, you have to win. You can't afford to go to Milwaukee having to win that game. Every other plan goes out the window. Put your stars and keep them on the court as long as you can. And, you know, the Steve Nash walks away a victor, and Budenholzer's got his guys fresh for game six now. They have to stave off.
I'm so glad you brought up that point, Lee, because I had that in my notes. Because, again, all the credit goes to Kevin Durant, who's doing the 49, 17, and 10. But I wrote this down. I was like, I wonder if another coach, cough, Bud, say a coach who never played in the league, a coach who never played in hard-fought playoff series, like knows like the war of attrition, how important a pivotal game five is and all this. Would he have let Durant, some other coach, again, like Bud, play all 48 minutes? So I think you're spot on, Lee. I think Nash, of course, sensed the importance of this game, how he was playing, how he looked, and just didn't overthink it. He's like, you know, he's Steve Nash, I'm sure he could look up. I'm sure, I don't know if he's played ever 48 minutes of a 48-minute game, but I know he's played over 48 minutes in overtime playoff games. Like, he just gets it. He was like, no, you just go with the greatest player, and you just don't overthink this one. Like, yeah, I wrote that down because I think some coaches would be afraid to do that, and Budenholzer isn't he's a perfect example of someone that wouldn't ever do that. And I
don't know, Skeets, 45 minutes for Chris Middleton last night, 41 for Giannis, and you got to give a shout out. 2 minutes for Elijah Bryant. Why? A minute for Thanasis. Why? You're trying to win the game, right? I mean, those guys didn't cost you the game.
No.
But literally playing them is pointless.
Yeah.
Like, where was Bobby Portis? Bobby Portis couldn't get on the court when Kevin Durant was walking into Chris Paul mid-range jumpers time and time again against Brook Lopez. Where, like, okay, I don't know. Now I feel like I'm going crazy. Like, I'm advocating, like, put Bobby Portis on there. As if that's going to really help anything. But there's no reason to play the guys who should be the 12th and 13 men in your rotation in the biggest playoff game of the season.
The Thanasis minute was great, though, because it was at the end of the second quarter. He came in as a defensive stopper. And so he played one possession, it went the offensive end, and then another one on the defensive end. And then there was a whistle, and he just sprinted off. He knew he was coming up. There wasn't a sub called.
I think it was Bryn, because it was Bryn Forbes maybe getting a shot at the other end.
It was offensive possession. Yeah, he's done. He called it. He's making the call. He's like, I'm done here. I don't even want to play on offense. He knows Bud's rotations. I get why, you know, Giannis wasn't put on. I think Kevin Durant would have toasted him. Giannis isn't a one-on-one guy on the perimeter.
Right.
You know, we saw what Jimmy Butler did to him in round one. Like, he's going to get burned by Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant was going to shake him, see you later. Giannis has more value as a help defender in the paint. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's just more of a mental attitude. The disposition, say, hey, I'm going
to
take him for a couple possessions, and I think it continued
when
over.
The best player who already won Defensive Player of the Year goes, I got him. Let me at least have a go at him. At least show that. Instead, he's saying after the game, and I sort of love this from Giannis because it's such a swerve, he's saying he's the best player in the world right now. Well, yeah, but, you know, you should believe you are. I hope you
why
do.
Why do you love that?
Well,
I
think it's funny because remember we were joking heading into the Heat series where it was like, ooh, can the Bucks beat the Heat? Man, they could have dodged them in the regular season. Instead, they got them. And then it was like, Giannis was like, well, I don't know if anything will be different. And we thought that was funny because it's usually like, yeah, things are going to be, guys, it's the macho angle and all that. So I remember Trey bringing that up, I think it was. And this is sort of the equivalent of that. It's just Giannis going, well, he's the best player in the world.
So that means next season, Giannis is going to stick KD in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's really weird. But I think it says something to your team, being the best player on your team, saying, even if he gets cooked, to at least try it. And, you know, he couldn't do any worse than anyone else was doing last night is the other thing. And he's a lot taller than a Middleton or a Tucker.
And at least you go down like saying, well, we put our best defender on.
I mean,
this guy's Defensive Player of the Year. He had a couple of goes at him. Even he couldn't stop him because, you know, Durant, he looks at Middleton and he's like, okay, whatever I feel like I'm getting here, mid-ranger, three-pointer, whatever. And again, Middleton tries.
Middleton's good. He's a defender.
He scraps.
Yeah, he is.
But Kevin, you need Kevin Durant to, like, if Giannis is there, at least he's like, well, this guy I know is, you know, taller than me, or you know, maybe longer than me. He's athletic, you know.
Something.
He can at least make life more difficult than anybody else one-on-one in that situation. And you know, that is like Ben Simmons after game one against the Hawks. You know, we heard him say to Doc Rivers, I'm taking Trey.
Yeah.
You know, because Trey Young lit him up. Like, again, that's sort of what you want from your leaders in the team, to say, I don't care. I'm taking him. I'm guarding him now because I want that challenge. And it was Kawhi in that Raptors series, wasn't it, who said, I'm taking Giannis game 3 and 4 here. Mm. And it turned the series. So Giannis to not sort of take that authority away from Bud and say, listen, I don't know what you're doing, but I'm going on Kevin Durant. At least if we're going to go down, it's going to be Kevin Durant hitting threes over me and not over a small guy like Chris Middleton. But, you know, Giannis, maybe he lacks that leadership quality, and Bud certainly, Bud, he does just seem to sit there and just go, I'm going to stick true to what I believe here. You know, it's like the Phil Jackson, where he would let his teams play through adversity a little bit in the regular season.
Yeah.
Bud's kind of almost like, because when you see that lead just chipping away as well, it's like, you've got to find something here, Budenholzer. And he storms that, you know, he power walks along the sidelines there. You know, he's got his hand up like this a lot, but he doesn't seem to be actually changing things up and making something happen. And again, though,
he changed up the defense in the regular season. That was nice from last year.
And on the offensive end, there's, you know, those guys are experienced enough to, like, okay, we've got to get the ball moving. That's how we play. That's how we beat this team. But it just, you know, it just wasn't there. It was a really deflating performance, because now, obviously, they go home for game 6. But I'm really trying to convince myself that there's any way. Okay, maybe they win game 6, but there's no way they're winning game 7. You know, because James Harden, now that he's gotten through a game, he clearly didn't look good. I expect he's going to play game 6 and game 7.
You think Harden will play game 6? Well, Reggie Miller says they should go Galaxy Brain and rest them both.
Listen, Reggie takes a lot of heat online, and I think he's not too bad. I think some of that heat is unwarranted.
But right.
Him, a legend of the game, saying rest the guy in game, rest Kevin Durant in game 6. I was shocked by that. I think
I think, look, if you tone that take down and go, you of course play your guys that are healthy, including Kevin Durant, the best player in the world probably right now.
If
you fall down, you know, I don't even know what it would have to be, because they just came back from 17. So I don't know at what point in the game you'd have to be down by so many, but you know, you would wave the white flag, I guess, the proverbial white flag, early in a game 6 if you're down a significant amount. But yeah, not resting them from the jump.
Can you imagine Steve Nash saying to KD, so KD, we're going to rest you for game 6 in Milwaukee? Like, you know, our competitors are like, these athletes, they want to go out, they want to end this series and get as much rest as possible. KD, just take a break. Don't play the game. Sure, no worries. We'll do it in game 7. But at the end of the day, like I say, the Bucks. It is now, that was their chance. That was their real chance to steal this series, you know, go home for game 6. And again, James Harden, whatever happens, he would have been forced to play in game 6 if they were down 3-2. Maybe he doesn't, I'm not sure. But now instead, it's like the Bucks have to hope Giannis has a great game, the game of his life. Durant has the worst game of his life. Harden is as bad as he was in game 5. They get no contributions from role players like Jeff Green and Blake Griffin. And then Jrue Holiday snaps out of his... Like, it's like everything has to sort of tilt in Milwaukee's favor and against Brooklyn to see them taking this series now, which is disappointing, because they... I had much higher hopes for them coming into this series.
Now, they had to finish it, obviously. They did win game 3 and 4, which seems a lifetime ago, but they had to finish it off in that second half.
People were picking their matchup for the Eastern Conference Finals after the game 4 win. I think this is still going 7. I think the Bucks can certainly play better in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. The question will be, like, is this the time they're showing the fortitude in the playoffs? You're down 3-2. You just had a depressing blown lead loss against a legendary performance by Kevin Durant, but you're going home. I said it after game 3. Skeets, you said it after game 4. There's still a 23-point game for the Bucks out there. It's more likely to come in Milwaukee than it is to come on the road, though, I mean, road court advantage apparently is a thing now. So we'll see. If I'm the Bucks, I don't know, man. Things have to change, but they just got to shoot the ball. They only made what? How many threes they end up making last night? They made 13. They shot 40%. That's all right.
Yeah.
If they shoot 40%, but they get a bunch more threes up, they hit 20 of them, we're looking at game 7. Everybody said this was going 7 because this was going to be a potential finals preview, even though they're both in the Eastern Conference. The championship team could come from this series. I still think that's the case. It's easy to bury the Bucks when they do dumb stuff because they keep doing dumb stuff and it's the same dumb stuff. But they're still a good team. They've still got the talent there. I think this is still going seven.
No, not, I didn't think it was going seven. This was going seven. I said Bucks in six, so I'm in trouble. In fact, I can't. I can't even win that bet.
No. Think if the Nets had their superstars for the whole series. Well, yeah. I mean, what a different series it would be. They still have won. Yeah, 3 of 5 games with half their guys. I think James Harden, even if he sits in game six, a great storyline would be Kyrie Irving subbing in for James Harden. That would be the perfect switch up there for Steve Nash. But to give Giannis some credit, he did say he was going to guard Kevin Durant in game six.
Nice.
So we'll see.
Nice. And a 34-12. I mean, Giannis did have a good game, but he didn't guard Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant had a better game.
Yeah, and I think it was Sean Powell I saw, right? The NBA playoffs especially have a way of revealing just who you really are as a coach and then as a star player. And I mean, that goes like with what we're talking about with Bud and of course Giannis and KD. Like, the fadeaway on Harden was bad from Giannis. Him botching the pass from Middleton, I think it was from Chris, right? Where he just fumbled it, and that was that, you know, I don't know what, he just panicked, he rushed, it just a classic butterfinger, you know, it happens. It was just unfortunate for him. It happened at the worst possible time in that game. I think that's the thing you're going. I'm with you. Bucks could win game six, no doubt. It's just like, at this point, it's tough for me, even who had the Bucks and have a $100 bet going with Tass, to be like, well, if it's a game seven and it's a 3-point game or it's a tie game with 3 minutes to go, there's just no possible way I can convince myself that a Giannis, a Chris, or a Drew will be coming through in the clutch over, of course, a KD, let alone maybe a healthier Harden. And I think it's unlikely, but a Kyrie too. It's just like, there's just no way I can convince myself.
What about a game six though? Game seven, yeah. Game seven for sure. Yeah. But they gotta win six first. I think that's the more important thing. Oh, and sure. You know, the Bucks locked down Kevin Durant as much as you can lock down Kevin Durant in Milwaukee's. I think they still got a chance. They'll get the more favorable whistle. PJ Tucker, no doubt, will be roughing Kevin Durant up as much as he can. Giannis apparently is going to take a turn. I don't think this thing's over yet.
So somebody hit me with the schedule. That must mean game six is Thursday night. I'm guessing back in Milwaukee, unless they got a weird 2-day break. I doubt it.
Yeah, they might have the Sunday game.
And then, is it a Saturday night game seven? Is it a Sunday afternoon game seven? Look that up there for me, Lily.
Right, we've got
if it even happens.
Seven will be on Saturday night. Thursday night in Milwaukee. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to Brooklyn for Saturday night.
To watch Giannis in the post, like, that is his move. That turn on the left block and the fadeaway. It's like LeBron James fadeaway from the left block. That's his move in the post. But at the same time, why do you go to that? I mean, it's just a post move at the end. Just get him on the move a little bit. It's like the Harden defense was fine, but that's what Giannis likes to do. He's not going to power through anybody. That's not what he does. He just needs to be on the move. So it's just strange. That's why Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton are there to be the foil when Giannis can't find it. I mean, just isn't on the move, and they haven't. They just haven't bailed him out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Blake and Jeff Green and Harden, obviously none of those can protect the rim, but they can body him, and Giannis allowing them to body him plays into their hands. I mean, a couple of times you saw him, he moves those feet around, you know, and he gets into that sort of jump hook spot. That's the spot he needs to go to. You know, even if he doesn't hit every one of them, that's the one at least he can get the shot off without them being able to sort of muscle him a little bit. But he's getting, I mean, he's, you know, he went into the paint so much more. I think most of his baskets came from that area. But he just has to be sort of ruthless, like a Chris Paul, where it's like every play, that's where I'm going, because these guys, there's no one up there who can contest those shots when I raise up. And, again, him, Budenholzer, Drew Holiday as a veteran saying, get down there. I'm just going to get down there and clear out for you to do it. But, you're right. It's hard to go to bed after those games.
It is.
You know, your brain's going, you're like, man, how do I process out of this game? It was an incredible performance from Brown. I feel bad for the Bucks because they're a fun team. You know, you like the Bucks, but just demoralizing a loss like that, because it's like the mental game, you know, they were up 17 points. They had a chance to really bury them and they couldn't. So anyway, crazy things happen in the playoffs. We've seen teams come back from 3-2 down and, maybe the Bucks can do it. Wouldn't that be a great story?
I mean, I think Trey is right. I think, like, if you're a betting man, I mean, isn't it more likely that we get a game seven? I think so. Than it ending in
series doesn't start till the road team wins.
Right.
Hasn't happened yet. People buried him after the depressing, demoralizing, never going to be able to respond from this down 0-2 after getting blown out twice, and they won an ugly one and they won a pretty one.
Yep.
The Bucks are still good, but when they look bad, it looks the same way that we've seen for the past three seasons, so it's impossible to shake it, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing, is like, again, we're doing this again. But then we are easy to slough off the times when they respond and actually do bounce back, which is a thing that the Bucks have done, so I don't know. It's got to be this is the biggest game of Giannis's career coming up in game six, so let's see the best game of Giannis's career.
Let's see. Thursday night, that game six, and then if it goes seven, Saturday night. The schedule says on ABC. All right, let's take a break before we start talking about the all-NBA teams. TK, what do you got?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
There are so many things I wish we could have both ways. For example, a zero-calorie cheeseburger. How about red wine without the headache? A dog that never poops. That'd be heaven. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords, stiff chinos, rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. I'm sorry, Don Draper. This is 2024. I want to look good and feel comfortable. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a little bit of everything. The air-knit boxer briefs are so good. The Ace sweatpant, mad comfy, but also great tailored fit. And because this is the summer of Henleys, yeah, I'm calling it, it's the summer of Henleys, you know I threw a few of them in my virtual shopping cart. Peacocking is for the birds, baby! Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. They're not flashy, just classic. Sort of like a No Dunks podcast. Always in style, always crazy comfortable. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code NODUNKS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code NODUNKS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, let's get to the All-NBA teams. The three 2020-21 All-NBA teams were announced on Tuesday night. And you won't believe this, a couple notable names were left off. But let's discuss who made it first. JD, if you want to go through these slides for everybody here on the stream team while I read the names. All-NBA first team, your guards, Steph Curry, Luka Doncic, your bigs, the Joker, Kawhi Leonard, and Giannis. All-NBA second team, guards, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, big man, Joel Embiid, Julius Randle making an All-NBA second team, and LeBron James for, I believe, what, the 17th time in his career or something like that, making an All-NBA team. And All-NBA third team, Kyrie, Bradley Beal, Rudy Gobert, Jimmy Butler, and Paul George. So, Trey, let's start with you. Just a big picture question. Any issues with these All-NBA selections overall? We can get into the nitty-gritty snubs and all that, but, like, yeah, just your first thought with these three teams.
Well, the biggest issue, Skeets, you mentioned it. Only three teams. Slackers, yeah. Not sickos. But all in all, I think these are pretty solid. No real complaints, I will say. The weirdest thing by far when we go back and look at this season, especially after the way last night went down, is that Kevin Durant is not on an All-NBA team, despite the fact we just saw him have one of the greatest playoff games ever. And kind of everybody is agreeing right now that he is currently the best player in the game, but he only played 32 games this season. Yeah. Kind of hard to make the case. Just going to look very weird historically that there's no KD here, considering, you know, the Nets had a solid season, but people aren't going to remember the calf injury and all this kind of stuff. But very weird that on a night the All-NBA was announced, Kevin Durant said, I'm actually the All-NBA player. But another thing I liked, Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, and Rudy Gobert all made it as centers. Actual centers. A lot of ink was spilled. A lot of digital pixels were spilled. A lot of podcast bandwidth chat about forward eligibility. And it didn't matter because everybody's like, these guys are centers. We're keeping them as centers. Another thing I liked, Kawhi Leonard over LeBron as the forward. An under-the-radar great season for Kawhi this year. 25 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. Almost 50-40-90. He ended up 39 from 3, 88 from the field. He only played 7 more games than LeBron, so it's not totally an availability thing, but it felt like Kawhi's season was definitely going under the radar, but I guess not. So those were my big takeaways. The centers remained centers. Kawhi over LeBron and no KD just looks weird.
Lee, let's get to some snubs. Let's just go to each conference. So let's go to the Eastern Conference first. Who's the biggest snub there to you?
Well, I think for me, it's Jason Tatum. Yeah. I think he had a fantastic season. Now, he missed some time with coronavirus protocol and stuff like that, but he was an all-star again this year. Just a fantastic player. But he also got more points total than Kyrie Irving, who finished as a guard on the All-NBA third team with 61 points. Tatum finished with 69, but because of the positional changes there, the Tatum was actually eligible as a guard, but he got more votes as a forward.
This is so stupid. I mean, we talked about this other time. They got to fix this. That's dumb.
So he not only misses out on All-NBA selection and that accolade that you carry for life, but it also costs him because he can't now sign this Supermax extension, which it would have been valued at an extra $32 million for it. So now money, you know, he's going to be fine. He's going to have enough money throughout his career, still these things are important for players. And, you know, the fact that he missed out simply because of that positional quirk, if you like, it's weird. It's weird. And I just think it sort of reflects badly on how these are set up if a guy who can have more votes actually misses. Now, I know, like, for example, in the Coach of the Year, I believe Monty had more first-place votes than Tibbs, but Tibbs got more total votes. So things like that can happen, but it just sort of seems a little bit weird that they can allow that to happen like that so that a guy with less votes gets on over a guy who has more votes because of the position. So he's a great player, Jason Tatum, had a great season. The Celtics did trail off towards the end a little bit there, but I think he was deserving. I'm not going to get into that. Well, he should have been over this guy because I think the other guys were deserving as well. But at the end of the season, when it's all said and done, he misses out, and I think he's unlucky because I think he had a great year.
Yeah, with this position stuff, though, we already talked about this like weeks ago, but either get rid of it completely. If you want to do that, just get rid of it. And then now we're just picking the 15 best players, and it doesn't matter, and you can still rank them 1 through 5, and then 6 through 10, and 11 through 15 for your teams. Or, like this perfect Tatum example, you have to pick one position, because this thing where you can then split, like, some voters are saying he's the guard, some voters are saying he's a forward, well, it actually came back to bite him in the ass. So if he was only allowed as a forward, let's say, or a guard, doesn't matter, like, maybe it's up to the team, maybe it's up to the player, for crying out loud, at the start of the season, I don't know, then, you know, that gets rid of this issue too. But Tass, Western Conference, is there a snub to you that you're like, whoa, that's tough, that person isn't in the mix here? Who would get your vote for that?
Well, we talked a lot about how deep this guard situation is. I don't even know how you did 10 teams. I mean, there could be like 20 teams worth of guards because Donovan Mitchell and Devin Booker both left off. That's rough. I think, you know, we had this conversation about Donovan Mitchell and whether or not he's a superstar. He's definitely a playoff superstar for me. Mm-hmm. But I think it's fine leaving him off the All-NBA teams because this is a regular season nod. And his team does it by committee in the regular season, but he takes over in the postseason. So the six guys, I think, are entirely fine in Steph Curry, Luka, Damian Lillard, Chris Paul, Bradley Beal, and Kyrie Irving to take over him. But then, you know, Devin Booker on the outside looking in seems a little nuts now as well. But, you know, he did it by committee with Chris Paul. So it's two guys I think are fine to be left off. I think Jason Tatum is the a little bit of the bonkers one. He did get COVID-19 this year. And so it seems like he missed a lot of time. But in the end, he only missed 8 games, which is...
Really?
Yeah, which is phenomenal, considering, you know, he got it earlier in the year and he continuously talked about how it was affecting him. over and over and over again. He's a long hauler, it seems, but I think he could have snuck in over Jimmy B. You know, Jimmy Butler is getting a lot of love as you know, a guy who's going to make it every single year. But you know, Jason Tatum was just—he's sort of like what Kevin Durant was yesterday. He was just the Celtics offense unto himself a lot of this season, and especially with Jaylen Brown was out. So Jimmy Butler missed more time than Tatum. So I would sneak Tatum in there. He was a beast this year. I mean, we saw the 50-point game there in the play-in and all that. Like, it's hard for me to leave that guy off. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Tatum averaged more points, rebounds, steals, and blocks, had fewer turnovers than Paul George. And then Tatum had more points, rebounds, blocks than Jimmy Butler while also finishing with a higher three-point percentage and free-throw percentage. Yeah, Tatum's a tough snub. There's so many. Look, the one thing you always take away from these, especially, I guess, in the last couple of years, Trey, is like, my God, NBA is pretty fire right now. There's so many damn good players, like where I am making 10 all NBA teams and people are still calling out snubs and saying, how did you not have this guy in the mix? Because there's so much talent. And it's like where you are in the league, how your team plays. Now, Beal is interesting, right? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, he's the only guy that on any of these teams, like of the 15 guys, that was on a team with a losing record. I think I have that right. It's just Beal.
You're correct.
So,
you're not wrong.
And that's where the like, well, how, like, was Donovan Mitchell not the best player on the Jazz who had the best record in the league? Yeah, he missed time at the end, but was it significant enough? I mean, LeBron missed a ton of time. He's still in there. I know it's LeBron James. We hold it at a higher standard. But that's a bit of a tough one, despite Beal going back and forth a little bit at the end with Curry for the scoring title. I think Jazz fans have a right to be a little upset about that because Beal wasn't on a winning team. If that matters at all to you in all NBA votes, because it doesn't seem to as much as All-star votes for some reason, right? People don't care as much, yeah, like about your records. Like, hey, he's an awesome player. I don't care if his team is under 500. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there were going to be a few tough choices here. Chris Paul and Devin Booker was. Yep. It just felt like that was going to be a choice. It feels like Chris Paul is the right choice now, having seen the postseason. But like Tass is saying, this is technically a regular season award, and there was going to be the choice. It felt like between Westbrook and Beal. Beal, you know, was a league leader in scoring for a long time, and I would like to see the percentage of leading scorers in the league who make the All NBA team at least somewhere out there. Yeah. It's got to be super high.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously these are the best players in the game, so you can see. You can see the pitch there, yeah. But I don't know. Donovan Mitchell needs to take over the reins of Damian Lillard as the guy who gets snubbed the most here. You know, Damian Lillard often would have something to say after an All-Star game or after an All-NBA selection. Now he has kind of established himself in the upper echelon of a guy who's going to make it time and time again, whereas Donovan Mitchell is knocking on that door. Skeets loves every Western Conference guard out there except for Donovan Mitchell, it feels like, at some points. But yeah, I mean, the Jazz were the best team in the league for the whole season, and Donovan Mitchell was their main offensive player, at least. I feel like voters are just like, hey, we got one Jazz on there. We got Rudy Gobert. He's a huge part of their team, so maybe that's it. But I would have been happy with Mitchell over Beal. If you want to make a case for Westbrook over Beal, that's fine too. But it really just comes down to there are a lot of incredible guards in this league, and sometimes you can go 10 teams deep.
What about one of your favorite players not making it too there? Not even Zach LaVine. Zion Williamson. Zion Williamson, though, not even really getting close, was a little bit of a shock. But again, that part of it's
being
so young and your team is not great. So they're going to be.
Yeah, he'll be on these teams in the future. But I mean, he didn't even make my team.
Yeah, fair enough. Lee, what were you going to say? I thought you were going to.
I thought you were going to say Zach LaVine getting a vote there. I mean, I thought he had a great season. I didn't think he was all NBA worthy, but good for him. He did make an All Star game at least, and he showed he's improving every year, Zach LaVine. So maybe he can sneak onto one of these before his career's done. I just didn't think this season was.
I think it's possible. Yeah, I was going to ask, what was your favorite like weird vote, Tass, or throwaway vote, or just like, what, that guy got a vote? Because you get the whole breakdown on NBA.com, like, here's all the other guys that received votes. Did you have a favorite?
I'll just jump to LeBron for a sec, because I didn't even look at the weird votes on this one. I think LeBron, that we're not even talking about his games played, just kind of, it shows that this is a bit about narrative. We know LeBron is incredible, so he's fine. He's on there. We just can't leave him off. There's no way. He only played 45 games this year. But, yeah, I'm fine keeping him on there, too. I just don't care. I just think he is one of the best players, so he's totally fine. It is weird. Now we're at the point of his career where he's not a lock for first all NBA, which means we're getting old. He's getting old. Now he can make the second team, and it's normal. You know, it's just now part of his career. He started his career like that in 2004-05. He didn't make it the first year, but he made it the second year as a second All-NBA. Same for the following year. Then a run of firsts, and now we're in the old man game where LeBron is second or third, but he's still automatic. And I think when you look back at a guy's resume, I guess what's more important is just the overall accumulation,
yes,
the overall number 100%. Of All-NBA versus teams. Yeah, it's you don't really specify 15 All-NBA first. Although it's nice to have that record if you do have the record, but it's more important just to be there.
I've never had an argument about basketball, like greatest players of all time, like their rankings or whatever, be it at the bar, the barbershop, whatever. I've never once heard somebody go, well, yeah, he made 15 All-NBA teams, but he was only first team All-NBA four times or something like that. I've never heard it said. No one ever brings it up.
I disagree. I think you do hear it. You'll hear it with more like fringe cases. You'll hear like Reggie Miller. He made some All-NBA teams. He was never a first team All-NBA guy. And I think that does factor in. I think first team is really the only team that matters.
Sure. Okay. Second and third doesn't matter. They sort of cancel each other. It's like, Lee, you love Dirk Nowitzki. Do you know off the top of your head how many, I don't know, all NBA selections Dirk Nowitzki had?
No, not off the top of my head. I'm going to say he probably had 12.
No, you're right. 12 is the answer. Now, how many first team? Yeah.
He was against Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett for a lot of that. I'll say he snuck in for probably four first teams.
I think you're a little high. I don't have him in front of me. I think it's three. Yeah. I don't even know. My point is we don't know, and it doesn't matter.
No, we don't know.
But if you were getting in a discussion and you were saying, who's the best four between those three? Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, and Dirk Nowitzki, guaranteed that first team All-NBA is coming
up in that
discussion.
I don't think so. This is where I disagree. I think your one point, when a guy makes the Hall of Fame or is like a borderline guy that's Hall of Fame, that's the one time it does come up in people's blog posts and on other podcasts. Oh, well, the guy was a five-time All-NBA player, but he never made the first team, or he made it once, whatever. That's when you sort of hear, I'd never have heard somebody say, between Shaq and Hakeem, man, how many All-NBA selections they have? Okay. Well, how many of them were first? How many of them were, I just never have heard that. I disagree on that. Because we don't even know the answers. Why wouldn't we, sickos, know the answers to any of those? How many did Garnett make? How many did Dirk make? How many did Duncan make? We don't know.
If you're telling me on the Beach Steppin' podcast, we're deciding between the top four, power forwards of the 2000s, I guarantee you're looking up which teams they finished up on. As a sicko, I know you're going to be
looking it up, but I think my point is, like, if you don't know, then I don't think anyone really cares.
Okay, you don't know how many points Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has scored in his career either, right? I mean,
it's a lot.
Does it matter? Yeah, it does matter. And I think that first team 100% matters. And that's, second and third team, to me, those are basically the same thing. But if you can say, I was one of the five best in the league, also I was the best in my position, that matters more than coming in second and third.
Yeah. Four All-NBA first teams for Dirk.
Four, you were right, Lee.
I think of it more highly now.
Yeah, wow. I thought it was
four firsts, four seconds, and three thirds.
And Tim Duncan, I mean, did he make it as a center at any point?
Say that again. Four firsts, four seconds, and three thirds? He only made 11 All-NBA selections then?
That's what it looks like. Okay. Oh, no, he made it 12.
See, it's, I know that. I don't know the breakdown. This is a funny tweet talking about all this, though. Paul George now holds the record for most All-NBA third-team selections ever.
Wow.
Isn't that weird? He passed Carmelo Anthony, David Robinson, and Shaquille O'Neal. Paul George is Mr. All-NBA third team. Mm. That's his new nickname. Get rid of Playoff P. Okay.
That's fitting. It's fitting.
It sort of is.
It's a great, great
Honestly,
Hall of
it's
Fame
perfect.
Debate.
Yeah, it sort of is. Yeah. It is.
It's a great Hall of Fame debate. Will Paul George make it?
Jeez.
Just wait. 10 years from now, we're going to be saying, Paul George made a bunch of All-NBA teams. Didn't make a first team.
He'll still be in. He'll still make the Hall of Fame because he made an All-NBA team. I mean, I guess I just don't. I think the honor is in being one of the best players at your position that year. Now, you're saying it's a more of an honor to be considered one of the top two, or in case of a center, the best at your position. Sure. I just don't think casuals by any means, and I don't even think us, get into the nitty-gritty with just where they fall in all NBA selections. But I mean, people care about All-Star selections more than all NBA, which is a whole other topic, which is just as weird. But anyway, let's take one more break, and then we'll get to Tweet of the Night.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, we've got a lot of breaking news here to discuss. We still got to talk about Chris Paul. We got to talk about Kawhi Leonard. And now, Stan Van Gundy, by all accounts, has just been fired as head coach of the Pelicans. But before we get to that, Lee, tweet of the night.
Tweet of the night. Wow.
Twitter. So, not a bad night on the tweets last night. Quite a bit going around, but you addressed a couple of them there, Magic and Reggie Miller. Yep. And I had one. I thought I had a banger because I don't know if you guys saw it halftime during the Nets and Bucks game. Going around, there was a guy, a country singer, doing the DMX song.
I did.
He did a couple of, and it was people were saying yeah. It was James Dolan. It was JD in the Straight Shot. I'm like, oh my god, this is incredible. So I DM'd James Herbert, who was there, and I was saying, is this that didn't look like him? But so many people were saying it was him, and I was like, if that's him, that's my Twitter tonight. No. Turns out it wasn't him. Unfortunately. So not quite as much fun. But I did get a tweet that I think all of us can relate to. Came from Michael Grange, our old friend up in Toronto there, saying, hamstring James Harden is paying tribute to men's leaguers everywhere. Moving as little as possible so as not to break whatever isn't broken. Chilling at the bottom of the zone, telling the other guys what to do because he can't do it himself. I'm getting emotional just tweeting this. And I think as all of us are either in our 40s or approaching our 40s, that's what happens when you start playing pickup. You sort of start pointing the finger a little bit more and, not doing quite as much out there on the court. And the best part, though, is breaking whatever isn't broken or not breaking it.
Yeah.
I think that's what it feels like. Sometimes you play and you wake up the next day and it's like, God, what did I do? I didn't even do anything. This part of my body, I didn't even know existed, starts hurting. So I wonder how James is feeling this morning. Probably a little bit better than us.
Speaking of, I guess us talking about ourselves playing basketball, Lee, this was a tough look for you and for us, honestly. We went, Trey and I, we stopped by Club Top Shot last night. Our guy Pete invited us to swing by. It was his birthday, so we had to crash the live stream. And whatever, these guys want to battle us to a game. A 5-on-5, 4-on-4, we'll figure it out. In Vegas, if possible. Club Top Shot versus us, right?
They're a little outdoor.
We haven't figured that part out. But anyway, they're asking for comparisons. They're asking, they're trying to scout us. Are you guys even any good? What positions do you play? So we're going through it. And I start bringing up Lele. I mean, this guy's automatic from three-point land. This guy helped Steph Curry win an all-star three-point contest. This guy, shot around with him. He's beaten NBA legends. And, while I'm saying this, Petey's looking it up online. He's like, well, let me see, right? So he pulls up I believe, Trey, it was the first time Lee did the three-point shootout.
2014.
Yeah, you're in the E-Dog sleeved jersey, and you are brutal. I looked like the biggest goof saying, man, this guy's amazing. And then we're watching a clip of you breaking threes.
Listen, I started off 2-for-2 that year as well. I remember that. I was on track for 30 points or whatever the maximum was then. But then I think I missed 18 in a row after that. Yeah.
TK and I are like, he's a lot better than this. He got better as the years went on. That wasn't even a three-point, NBA three-point line. Yeah. He actually is better from anyway, it was very very funny.
God, how did that one be the first one
know.
That pops up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think Mr. Google's got it in for me somehow. Come on, man.
Mr. Google. We'll have to ask Jeeves what the hell's going on with that one coming up first. Okay, great stuff. Yeah, you had a lot of great tweets to pick from there. I like that one from Grange, who, by the way, is a great basketball player. It was a long time ago that I played with him, but he was legit good. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a good shooter, too, isn't he? I think that's what I've heard. I've never played with him that I remember.
He's legit. Yeah. He's really good.
He's got unlimited Grange.
He's a hell of a shooter. He's a beautiful shooter of the basketball, I would say, Lee. You would love it. Okay, so news here, right before we jumped on, and the news happening while we're recording. Let's start with Shams early this morning saying Chris Paul is in the COVID-19 protocols. So the West Finals are going to start either on Sunday or on Tuesday. And Shams notes that the protocols allow for a quicker return to action for those who are vaccinated, but I don't think we know if CP3 is vaccinated. So we really don't know.
Well, apparently now Jalen Rose is saying that Chris Paul is vaccinated. Okay. So a lot of this is hinging on if Jalen Rose is accurate about Chris Paul's vaccination status.
Okay. I mean, there's not much to add to this because we just don't know. I mean, this sucks, but we hope, I mean, especially with a guy like Chris Paul, we just got done talking about, like, wow, this is amazing. You know, knock on wood, he hasn't been injured. Like, this would be terrible if he were to miss a couple of games of the Western Conference Finals because of this, but I guess we don't know.
It would be terrible, but I'm optimistic.
Okay.
I know we don't really know, don't have details, but at the same time, we know this league. We know the NBA makes the decisions it wants to make. And LeBron James was just at a tequila function where he broke, quote unquote, protocol. They got him back playing pretty soon. So, I'm just taking all the information I've seen, whether or not Chris Paul is vaccinated. Yeah, the game started in either 4 days or 6 days. He would have 4 days off or 6 days off. So it seems like a pretty big number. It is questionable whether or not he starts the Western Conference Finals. Maybe he misses a game, but I'm still pretty optimistic that he goes out there and plays because, you know, the rules, I'm not even sure why it was publicized. I guess it is a bad sign that it was publicized because really, you know, if you take my position to heart, if you think, well, if he was going to be fine before game one, then why would they even put it out there?
Right.
That's a fair point. I'm just talking it out here in my head, but I don't know. I would guess that's a decent amount of time, and hopefully, the case is that he is vaccinated. But whether Jalen Rose is right or not, the NBA will make the right decision, hopefully, and get him out there as soon as healthily possible.
All right. Well, in related news, because the Suns are waiting to find out who the heck they're going to play in the Western Conference Finals, Brian Windhorst tweeting this morning, Kawhi Leonard is expected to miss Game 5 tonight against the Jazz after a knee injury he suffered in Game 4. I guess it was like 4.5 minutes or so left in that one, and then he didn't return because he had done some damage there. I think this is on his left knee, and his status for the rest of the series is in doubt, TK. Now, this is huge.
This is
massive because... he is on the short list of, so far in these playoffs, for most consistent and greatest player, Kawhi is. And, of course, we've seen what he's done before with the Raps and even back to his Spurs days. What's your take on this? It looks like he's not going to play in Game 5 tonight.
And apparently he's out indefinitely now, which means it could be the rest of the series. It could be the rest of the season if the Clippers continue to advance. This is potentially a championship-changing injury for Kawhi Leonard because... Kawhi in games 6 and 7 against the Mavericks was a huge part of the reason that the Clippers pulled off that comeback, just like he was a huge part of the reason that the Clips got wins in games 3 and 4, both he and Paul George going for 30 in both of those games in back-to-back games for the first time in a long, long time. A lot of pressure now on Paul George to be that number one guy. He did have a first-team All-NBA appearance, Skeetsy.
Oh, good.
2019. Yeah. Wow. So he just got a third-teamer. But we need to see a first-team Paul George if the Clippers are going to keep this up because, I don't know. I mean, who knows what's going to happen, you know? We just saw Kyrie Irving went out for the Nets. We're thinking, okay, maybe this is the Bucks' chance to go out there and do it. They got smacked in the face by Kevin Durant. So you can't take anything for granted if you're the Jazz. You got to come out tonight and take it to the Clippers and say, hey, you're missing your best player, and we know it. So I don't know. I mean, that's a bummer, though, because Kawhi was balling. Yeah. Like, he had turned it on to the point where we're like, maybe he's been the best player in the playoffs until Kevin Durant did what he did last night. 60, 40, and 90, I think, during the first round. I know he's been something close to that here in the second round. A major blow.
The stream team is saying over under 45 and a half points for Paul George tonight. Okay, Lee, what are you doing with that one? Are you going over
give
under?
Give me the over. Why not? Wow. Who cares? Okay. Wouldn't it be great to see a Paul George like 50-pointer in that? Wouldn't he just silence so many of the doubters and haters if he did carry the Clippers to a victory tonight in Utah and had a Kevin Durant-like performance? That would be awesome to see, because Paul George, when he gets it going, he is like Kyrie Irving to watch. Like, he's so smooth. He's got all the shots. He can get inside. He can do it all. It's just he has had moments where he's let himself down, but great opportunity for him to do that tonight. But
and the Jazz have their own issues with injuries too. I mean, of course, Donovan Mitchell's a little hobbled. I don't know if Conley's coming back.
I saw Conley got the James Harden sort of upgrade to questionable. Or doubtful, maybe. Anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Maybe this Kawhi injury. Maybe the Jazz say, well, maybe we just sit Mike Conley out for another game. Who knows? But I'm optimistic, as I've seen in the stream team, unconfirmed, but they're saying it's a knee sprain. So that indefinitely for Kawhi hopefully is more kind of like, we're just not saying he'll be back for game six. So let's hope he is, and it's nothing more serious right. than that, because as always, we just don't want any of these series decided by an injury, although most of them
every series at this point has been decided to some extent. Like, it feels like we've just, all stars have dropped left and right.
Feels Chris Paul, whose body's let him down in the playoffs so many times, if he was to miss significant time with coronavirus protocols, that would just be devastating. But, you know, we know those are sort of 10 to 14 days. So, you know, at worst, I think he misses, it depends, I guess, on the series. I don't know. But it's just deflating, isn't it, to see all these guys going down right now. We've had a great playoffs.
It's just the Bucks that are healthy, right? I think the Bucks are like the only team that's pretty much fully healthy here. The Hawks are missing DeAndre Hunter. I mean, not as big as missing Kyrie Irving, but yeah, definitely a starter. Basically every other team is dealing with injuries as well. Mm-hmm. I guess Embiid is still playing, but hampered a little bit, as we saw in game four.
I guess the Suns, the only team that's through it, are the fairly healthy ones.
Chris Paul?
Well,
If he's back, yeah.
Yeah.
Final piece of news. My God, I might need some help with this one, guys, because I saw it coming through in the stream team with the news that Stan Van Gundy is out as the Pelicans head coach. Yeah, DiVincenzo for the best. Good point. SVG, one season? Was that 1 year? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. But, like, Stan Van Gundy was coaching the Pelicans for three seasons. One season, and he is out. Tass, shocked by this news, this decision from Griff and the Pelicans organization to move this quick off SVG?
Yeah, definitely a little bit shocked. I thought he'd get more than one season, but it sort of seems like a bit of a Lloyd Pierce situation where he wasn't connecting with players. And, you know, by some reporting, Kevin O'Connor, after Woj's report that he was fired, Kevin O'Connor reporting that an assistant may take over, and that, you know, leads me to believe that there was just some sort of butting of heads with the head coach, and that wasn't being connected to the players. So he wasn't connecting with the players. So yeah, I am shocked from the outside looking in, knowing how great a coach Stan Van Gundy is. I considered Lloyd Pierce a good coach. I considered him a smart basketball mind. But at the end of the day, I guess if you're not connecting with players, and the Pelicans front office saw success with Nate McMillan, an assistant, immediately after it, without switching any of the roster, although the roster did get healthy, and that helped Nate McMillan a lot. All those guys who were signed with free agents really just came back healthy, and that helped a lot. I think that's probably a motivating factor for the Pelicans front office. But, you know, I'm a Stan Van fan, just like I was a Lloyd Pierce fan as a man. So, you know, I feel it. But I guess there were these rumors towards the end of the season that Stan Van wasn't really connecting with his players all that well. And they decided to make a decision. And, yeah, I could see the reflection in the mirror of the Hawks situation there.
Who do they want is what I always go to when this happens after some time after the end of your regular season, when other coaches start getting fired and are now available and there's many other open spots. So maybe there's a race for a particular coach. Anyone come to mind, TK? And what do you think of SVG being fired here?
Well, I think it just shows how accelerated the team building process is here. The Pelicans have a star in Zion Williamson. Stan Van Gundy put the ball in his hands and said, go to work, be a point center, be the point Shaq, and score as many points as you can in the post. I thought it was a great move. I thought they would continue that. It was kind of similar to like Zion almost playing the Hedo and Dwight Howard roles at the same time. Shout out to the old Magic team, but... you know, we've saw a superstar leave the Pelicans in the past. We've saw what happened with Damian Lillard there in Portland, kind of having a second star or a second star who's not necessarily on his level to take the next step. And we're seeing with Dallas now that they're going to be listening to what Luka has to say with regards to him. So, yeah, you got to do everything you can to keep your best players around. How about Mike D'Antoni as a Pelicans coach? I mean, I don't know. He's going to be interviewing for the Portland Trailblazers job. That's probably a little more appealing since they're further along in the process. But imagine what Zion could do in a Mike D'Antoni system.
Lee, what do you think of all this?
To be perfectly honest, not that surprised, because the rumors were sort of starting to swirl towards the end of the season when it seemed like the Pelicans were going to miss even the play-in tournament. I think that was a sort of minimum requirement for Stan Van Gundy this season. To be honest, don't think he was the right hire. I know we've talked about that either at times throughout the season. So interested to see exactly where Dave Griffin goes now, because he's got a few big decisions to make this offseason. Lonzo Ball's another one. And I know, I think it was Kevin O'Connor was saying as well, Teresa Witherspoon is also being highly considered or strongly considered for that role. So, you know, when you have a franchise star like Zion, and there's no question about what he can do for a team, he's still a young player, of course, but I think we can all see that he's one of those players who can really carry a franchise as he continues to grow and mature. So very important, I think, for Stan to get this decision right, because it will be Zion's had, he had Alvin Gentry at the start, and now he's had Stan Van Gundy. So he's going to have another coach in his young career. I think stability is probably the most important part of Zion's growth, because if he can sort of relate and a coach can really find what works for him and best for the franchise, that's their key to success. Because, I mean, Stan did the right thing by just saying, okay, Zion's a star, we're going to get him as much of the action as we can, but now you have to continue to grow that and get the players around him. So, yeah, Dave Griffin's got some work to do there, but I think he's better to get rid of Stan now if he's not the long-term choice, and try to get whoever is that choice in as quickly as possible and get them started working with Zion.
Yeah, Teresa Witherspoon and Fred Vinson being reported by Kevin O'Connor as New Orleans assistants who could take over both former players and, you know, sort of in that Nate McMillan sort of light. You know, maybe they have a connection with Zion and the players. I think the Mike D'Antoni one's interesting. I see him as such a connection to Alvin Gentry, you know, having spent time in Phoenix together, offensive guys. So I doubt that they go with a Mike D'Antoni for me. I don't see that happening. But the assistant's taking over. You know, it's always good to see some new blood in there.
We got a lot of coaching job openings suddenly, right? It felt like we didn't have a lot, but now there's, I mean, help me out. We've got Portland, we've got the Pacers, we've got Boston, the Celtics, we've got now the Pelicans, the Magic still need a head coach. I think I'm forgetting one or
another
two.
Another one in Milwaukee, too.
Oh, there could be one in Milwaukee coming up.
Stream team kept saying maybe Bud will go and coach Zion and the Pelicans.
Maybe. Hey, anything's possible in this league. My God, that was a lot of breaking news for a Wednesday morning in like the span of an hour right before we jumped on. But I prefer this instead of it all happening right after we get done recording this podcast, which seems to be the case more times than not. Anyway, shout out.
Where's the best job, though, Skeets? Where do you think the best job is? Portland, you got Damian Lillard. Boston's got a nice nucleus built there with Tatum and Brown. Zion in New Orleans. The Pacers have Domantas Sabonis.
I think the Pelicans, I mean, again, I think it depends where you are in your coaching career. But that's like sort of a little bit of low pressure on you coming in there. Young team, already a guy that we were just saying could probably be an all-NBA player in Zion Williamson and some other young talent. You know, and I would say a creative GM in David Griffin. I think he has made some mistakes, but he's not, you know, not batting 1,000 by any means. But then, like, that's like, I'm not saying the Pelicans are going to be better than the Blazers or the Celtics, or even the Pacers for crying out loud next year. But, like, I don't know if you're... It's a good, like, oh, I might have this... Well, I guess Van Gundy just got fired after 1 year, but it feels like it could be a job where you're, like, you could grow into that spot. Yeah. I don't know. I guess they're all pretty decent. The magic one is the one you're like, going to be here for the long run. I'm going to have to build it
up. It's going to be a young guy. That'll be a young hire for sure.
Yeah, crazy stuff. All right, let's call it there, guys. Before we know it, we'll be back doing another show.
We can't call it there. Not quite yet, Skeet, because we got a big game tonight. Hawks Sixers, and the question for me is, what are we going to see from Joel Embiid? Because he was struggling in the second half of Game 4 against the Hawks, 0-for-12. But the big thing, he did have 21 rebounds. I owe you guys a beef.
Oh, my God.
JD, roll that beautiful beef footage.
Joel Embiid had 21 rebounds.
That's a lot of roast beef.
Finally, Joel Embiid. No dunks. We love roast beef, which is rebounds.
Man, he really does hit the ground a lot.
Oh my goodness, this guy was on the floor like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that box out also of the at the end of John Collins where he just runs into him and smashes into the back. No call. Got the beef. Didn't get the win. And the people were all over me yesterday, Skeet. Mm. Sixers fans were like, I've been waiting for this Joel Embiid beef the whole season. The line writes itself, Embiid. Yeah. But we had a guest on yesterday. We were making him wait already, so we had to postpone it a day. So you got your beef, Sixers fans.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty amazing, too. Like, they did lose the game. He went 0-for-12 in the second half, but people just want to see those rebound highlights. Like,
gotta see that beef.
They've really done something special here with these beef rebound highlights. Okay, I'm glad we snuck it in. Okay, anything else? Anyone, we got anything else we need to show?
Should we tap dance a little more, see if there's any more news on a Wednesday?
I thought it was Friday news dumps.
Come on.
Here's the beauty of this. Even if we stop recording here and something happens, we'll be back on the beach in mere hours at 3 p.m. Eastern, live on YouTube if you want to join us as we read your NBA and non-NBA questions. So join us live then. We'll turn it around, get it up in podcast form as soon as possible. Thanks so much to the Stream team, especially helping out there with some of that breaking news happening during the show. We'll see you guys later today. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, join us on the beach a few hours from now. In the meantime, grab yourself some beefy Arby's.
Brace the day, people.